good. What do you do with it, and how do you get it in the first place? And the way it's gotten is by planting trees and maintaining the land, the forest land around us. About 9 million, over 9 million acres of timberlands here in northern Florida alone. And the people who work on that, who help secure that for us, are people in what's called land management. And today I would like to introduce you to Don Lewis, Mark Sanford, Victor Knuckles.
Buckle, sorry.
Why did I say Knuckles?
Whatever.
I know somebody named James Knuckles, that's why. And Marvin Buchanan. And all these gentlemen are in land management. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to throw out some questions. We just try to learn about what land management's about. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome to ask them, and they're more than welcome to try to answer them, okay? So what I'm going to do is start out is, what is land management? I've said something, but it's more to it than that, isn't there? Why don't you try for it, Mark?
Land management is managing your land for some productive use, whether it be for timber production, wildlife habitat. We do some management strictly for aesthetic values for people who want to ride through and see that they have a pretty piece of property. Most of my company's work is with timber production, and basically what we try to do is keep the highest yield possible on our timber growth, and when it becomes unprofitable to continue managing the timber in the state that it's in, then we usually clear cut it, site prepare, and replant with Marvin Buchanan's trees.
Okay, so basically, and there's the thing about timber. Timber is basically the wood, that's what you call wood that's usable, correct?
Right.
Okay, so you have to create wood that's usable, and that's called site preparation.
That's right.
What goes into site preparation? Okay, say like I've got some land, got a bunch of trees and stuff on it, and I want to make it into a highly productive site. What do you do? Let's go down the line here. See, what do you do first, and then how do you get to it? So why don't we start, let's say, with Mr. Lewis.
Put me on the spot.
Sure, why not?
First of all, let me clarify that I'm not specifically in land management per se. I'm an educator. I'm director of the forestry program at Lake City Community College, and I train. We train at our school technicians that help implement
right. The
management practices that some of the other gentlemen on the panel carry out. What I would have to say first of all is that probably the first thing that you have to keep in mind is with any land management activities, what is your goal? Mark mentions, is your goal timber production? Do you want to produce pulpwood, saw timber, poles, piling? Is wildlife your primary consideration? Just what are your goals?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are different procedures that can be followed in the land management activities based on your goal, and you got to go from there.
Okay, so say I want to have trees that are going to be used to make houses. What's my next step? Let me start with Mr. Buckles.
Well, first thing, we're going to have to get them planted. There's several different methods of preparing your land. We use a shearing or a chopping, single or double chopping. And then in most cases, we bed the land, which to plant the trees. And from there, for building material, you've got quite a long time span in there, 25 to 35 years to get your...
Yeah, trees are a pretty long crop.
Right. It just doesn't happen overnight. And to pulp, you can produce that quicker than you can your lumber.
Yeah, that's a shorter thing. So you clear the land. Basically, that's what site prep is, right? Okay. How could you clear it? You said there was chopping, and could you explain what some of those methods entail?
Well, usually have big rubber tire tractors or crawler type tractors with big tandem choppers or single choppers. That's a big drum with chopping blades on it that you can either put water in it or else you can pull it empty. You go across the land, you chop it. That just chops up all the undesirable stems that's there. Then most times you'll come along after that and you can give it a hot burn to burn up everything that you've chopped down. Then you come along with a bedding plow that throws up a bed. You pull that behind a big tractor too. And this enables your little tree to take off and grow faster. We used to just flat plant, but a lot of us has gone to bedding. I think some companies is considering maybe going back to flat planting again now. The cost is pretty high in all this.
Land management has a pretty large sort of business aspect to it.
Yes.
That's true. Okay, get the land cleared up. It's ready. It's got its beds. It's ready to take some trees. Now, you don't take a 6-foot tree and stick it in the ground, do you, Mr. Buchanan? You just, what happens here? How do you get a seed?
Well, after the land has been site prepared, the next step, of course, is to get it planted. There's a selection process. You have to determine, first of all, what the site is best suited for. Some of the students that come out of Lake City Community College that Don instructs can assist the landowner with a particular observation on the ground. There's also consulting foresters, there's county foresters, timber industry foresters, and nursery personnel that can help with the site selection to determine what the best species is, and also the intent of the landowner. If he's intending to grow for game food, of course he'll need to plant game food species. If he's intending to grow for timber production, whether it be pulpwood or long-term for saw timber, veneer wood, poles, or whatever, there is a species selection process at that point. And there's numerous places he can gather that information. Once he has attained the particular knowledge of the species, then he needs to go and locate a vendor that would assist him with the actual planting. There are people that can assist with the actual planting if you have your own facilities, but most often a contractor or a vendor can do a better job. He's equipped to do it and set up properly for that. They manage the trees better, take better care of them, and helps to ensure a better survival. I'm not sure if the weather has changed in the past few years or not, but it seems we're having a difficult time getting a good stand of trees. So it's real important that the tree planter as well as the nursery people coordinate closely to be sure that the trees are selected properly, placed in the ground properly, and then at that point really nature takes over, and it's an extended process then of whatever your objective is.
What kinds of trees do you plant, like oak and cedar, or is there one particular kind and why?
Well, primarily in North Florida, the slash pine is the predominant species. It's proven to be the most vigorous in most of the sites. Loblolly is well selected in a wetter area. And if you get into ornamental or game food, then you have oak species, autumn olive, and several other species that would be better suited for that.
Do you have much, is there much sand pine reproduction going on except in Ocala?
There's some sand pine in the western panhandle area. Eglin Air Force Base and some of the government properties in West Florida are using sand pine. They're switching now to longleaf, and hopefully they'll go with that because sand pine has very little ultimate use. It's basically used for fuel wood. The longleaf, of course, can be used for anything that you can grow a pine tree for.
There's not many mills that use that sand pine, is there?
That's correct.
One or two that use it.
The fiber length is too short for pulp process. Some mills do use it for craft paper, but if it's a dissolving cellulose, the mills select the species that they use. For instance, Buckeye Cellulose over in Perry will not buy a sand pine into their process, nor will they buy loblolly. They stick strictly with the slash into the longleaf species.
Does land management involve also... land management involves, there's a lot of aspects to it, as you can see. What I'm wondering is, do you constantly experiment? Are you the people who do the experimentation? say, to figure out, like, genetic. I know when you're looking for trees, you're looking for a tree that's going to grow in a particular, grow well, be healthy. What else do you look for, and do you experiment actually to find, say, super trees? You know?
I might speak to that. I'm involved in the genetics end of it, in the nursery, more than probably some of the other folks here. Genetics is an important role. If anyone's familiar with how well we grow hogs and cows, genetics has played a superior role in that. The same secrets apply in growing pine trees or oaks or whatever. They have genetic traits just like animals do. I guess over 30 years ago, the forest industry, particularly pulp mills, started selecting particular growth traits out of trees and started grafting these trees and growing them in nurseries. And they're selecting the particular trees that has the best growth rates now and best resistance to diseases. And they're collecting the seeds from those trees and planting them in nurseries. And we're collecting seeds off of those trees now. We're into actual second generation of upgrading the trees. They're all called improved, but we sometimes term them superior when we're dealing with the ultimate in improvement. A second generation has been termed superior trees. But I think that if you looking again at a particular site, you don't necessarily go to an improved variety. It's according to the objective that you've got there. Okay. Some species aren't improved yet.
Land management involves all of these kinds of things. I'm going to just pick at random here because you all are doing different things. And a typical day, you know, what is a typical day for somebody in land management, or is it just crazy every day?
Hiding from the boss.
Hiding from the boss, okay. Okay, that's always a part of it. We're going to talk to some millers, and you're going to hear a little more about those kinds of things, too. What else? Okay, besides that, what else? Like, okay, you get up and you go to work. What actually are you doing? Is there something that's better to do in the morning than in the afternoon? That kind of. What's your day like?
Let's you want me to tell Mark. You what my day's like?
Sure, go ahead, Mark.
When it's really hot, we try and do the most physical work, like if we're cruising a track of timber. In late summer, we try and start 6:30, 7 in the morning, and try and finish up around 2, because you're finally just so tired. That's about all the walking you can do when it's so hot. Or if we're marking timber, anything that we have to do a lot of walking, like inspecting a timber sale to make sure that the contractor cutting the sale is going by the contract, inspecting site preparation where we have to walk and make sure that they're also going by their contract. In the afternoon, we might try and catch up on some office work, doing a cruise summary, writing some letters to landowners, lining up future work, that kind of thing.
Okay, so basically it's this kind of job, just like the other kinds of jobs in forest industries, primarily are outdoor kinds of things. You really do work by the season and the time of the day as well as nature. Mm-hmm. If it's raining, I don't know how many of you are going to go outside and do some work. I know loggers will, but I know, you know, people in land management will. Let me see. If anybody has any questions from out there, please. These gentlemen are more than able to try and answer them. Like I said, they're more than able to try and answer them. Any questions?
You're putting us on the spot now.
Yes, we have a question in the back here.
More about logging, I guess, than land management.
We're going to be talking with loggers in just a couple of minutes. So can you?
Usually nothing.
Fire line.
If your site has been properly prepared and the bedding was mentioned, there's two reasons to bed. One is the bed actually pulls topsoil into a concentrated area where the tree can utilize it more quickly than if it has to wait for its roots to grow 6 feet instead of 3 feet. That's one reason. The other reason is to cultivate the soil and the roots of the hardwood brush that's usually present, expose those roots to the hot summer sun and temperature to kill the hardwood brush, so you don't have a lot of competition with your trees. So if your site preparation's been done properly, usually there's nothing to do but wait.
When you're working, sorry, go ahead.
There are some, if I understood your question, there are some cultural practices involved in that cycle. Basically, very little is done, but on two or three things, the jury is probably still out on, but people are now doing experiments or working with some herbicide applications before and after planting. Some organizations are even working on fertilization to see if their benefits will pay off in the long run. And, of course, the practice of controlled burning or prescribed burning is throughout the rotation at whatever given interval chosen is practiced, and in many cases is the only preparation you would have for a logging activity that you mentioned. Sometimes, although it makes it a very nasty place, it depends on the brush. Some people might burn before they would go in and mark a stand, just again to get some of the underbrush out of there, but it does make it a nasty place to work.
Mr. Post, would you mind describing a little more in detail the kinds of burns? You've just actually mentioned two kinds that I could tell. Could you talk about the kinds of burns and how they work? Mr. Post, talk about that. Yeah.
There are several different kinds of burns that can be done. One type is what we call a site preparation burn after the area's been chopped. It's been mentioned before. A lot of times, where people will see a smoke and think that the woods are on fire, but it's a site preparation burn where they're trying to burn up the debris that was left after a logging operation or after it was chopped. There are your control burns or your prescribed burns, and I know a lot of people in the audience. I see former students and people in the industry sitting in the audience. They know what it is, but in case we get asked the question, what is a prescribed burn? And it's just like if you go to a doctor and he gives you a prescription,
you burn it
to make you better. No, he doesn't burn you. This is a prescription to help make the stand better, and you can burn different times of the year. If you're burning, we've mentioned wildlife on several occasions to get your browse species. You can go with your summer burns, or if you're going to go for it, just depends again on your objective. Are you going for wildlife browse? Are you going for fuel reduction? Are you going for site preparation? There's several different types of burns, and of course, the worst is wildfire. You have to mention that, and that's kind of the bad guys.
Yeah, we'll be talking actually more about fires later on, but I just wanted to clear that up. We're at the end of this workshop, and before we leave, I'd like to ask each of you if you would mind just telling us how. Just go one at a time. We'll start with Mr. Buchanan first, because Mr. Postman's talking a lot here. How did you get into this? How did you get into land management? Why?
Well, I think land management spawned out of our other interest in forestry. We don't necessarily deal directly with the landowner as far as management is concerned frequently. We do it occasionally in an effort to do a total concept. We're timber dealers, timber harvesters. We have a nursery, and we also we provide a total turnkey situation. In those situations, we do get involved in land management. Most of the time, we're involved in harvesting and in reforesting.
Why did you get into it personally, I guess is what I was asking.
I think it's the love of the land, the call of the wild. I've got a degree in engineering, and I would rather be in the woods cruising timber than building a building.
Okay. Mr. Buckles?
Well, the landowner on the piece of property that our company has now leased said I stayed in his woods all the time, so he hired me. He said he might as well put me on the payroll. I was out here all the time anyhow. So here I am. Come over
did you do
years.
That before you lived on that land, or did you grow up on that land?
I more or less grew up on
no
it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
All right.
Been there so long and got so sorry I can't go nowhere else.
Petrified wood, yeah, that's right. Mark, what about you?
I like to be outside, and I like the idea of making land more productive than it is when we first start to manage it.
Okay. And what about you, Mr. Post?
Well, I like being outside, and although now in education I don't get out as often as I would like, but there are a lot of lures to the, I just love working outside. In many cases, I tell prospective students, I say, in this business, you're your own boss. By that, I don't. Everyone has bosses, but you work by yourself. A lot of times, you don't have someone breathing down your neck in an office situation. You have a lot of leeway. Of course, if you're not kind of a self-motivator, that can be a downside. But and as Mark said, it's knowing that you know, I've always liked the idea that in my mind, soul, and heart, that foresters for centuries have been the stewards of the land, and it's just a good feeling.
Well, you were one of the founder, weren't you? Of the weren't you one of the founders of the college, at the program?
Well, our school's our school is the second oldest in the United States, and it's been going on since 1947. So we've got a very distinct history to the school, and we're very proud of our heritage.
Okay, well, thank you very much for taking this, and we'll see you probably later tomorrow doing the same thing. You have a question you want to ask me?
Could I say one thing?
Sure.
You folks smell all that good smell coming from over here? They gave me a little sample a while ago, so y'all just tip right on by there.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot to tell you.
I'll tell you, that is some kind of good tasting around there.
All right.
Just tip right on around there. Tell them old dad said come around and tell
them. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Let's give everybody a hand and a thanks. Okay, what we're going to do now is, you've seen a little bit about how the land is managed, how the trees are planted, but in a couple of minutes, we're going to speed up the growth of those trees, and those trees are now going to be real tall. And what we're going to do is, we got to figure out how many of them we're going to cut down. So we'll have, in a couple of, about 11 o'clock, we'll have a workshop on how to figure out how thick your wood is and how much you've got and how much you need to cut. And then those of you who are interested will go out with Arthur Bailey and Mark Sanford and actually cruise for timber.